Hey everyone, this podcast is part of Story Mode, the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. You can support us and gain access to other great exclusive podcasts at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/GAMEFULLY unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds.
Hi everybody.
Hey everyone.
My name is David Bell.
I'm Tom Ryman.
And we just watched Under the Silver Lake.
Under the Silver Lake.
Why do we assume that all of this information is what we're told it is? Maybe there are people out there who are more important than us, more powerful, communicating things in the world that are meant for only them and not for us.
Yeah.
Oh, you think that's weird?
A little.
Okay. So I want to give this movie a little context first.
Yeah, absolutely. Because
we've been talking about this on Hypecast a lot. Most people might not have heard of it. It came out maybe a week ago.
Streaming.
Yeah, I've been waiting for it for a very long time. It is the director.
We've been talking about it for a year.
Yeah. This is the director of It Follows. This is his follow-up to It Follows.
It follows up.
Yes, It Follows Up. Which is a great movie, It Follows.
Yeah.
And so I was very curious what this was going to be, and then it's been delayed twice, and it was supposed to have a theatrical run, and it just got quietly put out on streaming, like a couple weeks ago, maybe last week.
It showed at Cannes like last May, didn't
it? And it got very mixed reviews. It's like at like a 50%.
Like a 50% of Rotten Tomatoes. Its Metacritic is actually slightly lower. It's in the 40s.
Wow. Okay. Well, that brings us to the question then. Did you like this movie, Tom?
I don't know. It might be brilliant. It also needs to be about 30 minutes shorter.
Yeah. I kind of had the same reaction, which for me means I liked it. Because it was this movie is a lot of like, what the fuck? And I love that shit. I love it. Yeah, I get how it's not for everybody, though.
This movie is 2.5 hours long.
Yes, it's too long. Although,
and
all
you
right.
feel every minute of it.
Here's the fucking thing.
Except in a few
thing.
Sequences.
Here's the fucking thing. Again, I sat down and I knew, like, okay, I'm going to watch this movie with a very critical eye. And I knew it was long, and I knew most people didn't like it. And then I just lost myself in the movie, to be honest. It was like Avengers Endgame for me. Like, yes, it's too long. That is objectively true. It didn't bother me when I was watching.
Okay, so here's why I think the movie might be brilliant. It's one of the most meta films ever made.
Yeah.
Because it's a movie about Hollywood, but it's also a movie about it's a movie about Hollywood. It's also a movie about filmmaking, and it's also a movie about seeing patterns and things that don't necessarily mean anything.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of shit in this movie
that doesn't mean anything.
That doesn't mean anything. He's basically trolling you with a lot of the stuff.
Yeah, the dog killer.
Dog killer doesn't mean anything. They don't mean anything.
Yeah, the
owl woman
lady.
Doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
The stuff he's doing with Vanna White obviously doesn't mean anything.
Oh,
but that's
yeah.
sort of like, that's like foreshadowing. Like, we learn that Andrew Garfield has been obsessively counting the number of times that Vanna White looks away while she's on Wheel of Fortune because he thinks it means something.
Him getting his hand stuck to a Spider-Man comic, that means something.
It means Spider-Man.
It means he was Spider-Man. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, but that's
like,
how the movie.
I know it doesn't mean
like,
anything
I think
profound.
I think he
I was
deliberately.
Just like, oh, it's because he's Spider-Man. Cool.
Right. Like in terms of this movie being meta, like he deliberately has Andrew Garfield as the lead. He goes and buys a Spider-Man comic for no reason.
Right.
That we see featured prominently. He hangs out with Topher Grace, who was in a Spider-Man movie.
Right.
What
yeah.
does it mean? It doesn't mean anything. But like he did it on like the director cast those two guys on purpose.
Right.
So that we'd have that meta reaction. Oh, these guys were in Spider-Man. Oh, they're referencing Spider-Man. Does Spider-Man have something to do with this? No, it doesn't.
No, it really doesn't. Just, like, but that's what I like about it is that it's kind of like, well, sometimes crazy shit happens. In this case, the crazy shit is like a naked lady with an owl mask. Like it's Like, these things do have meaning, just not in the life of... Because they have a
not
line.
Not in his life, yeah.
Yeah, they have a line where it's like, we all thought we'd grow up to be important. You know, that's the narcissist in us. And it's sort of that where it's like, you get the feeling that he's on the edge of something bigger that he's never going to get to see, because why would he?
Right. Well, like, it's like at the very end when the homeless king, I'd realize that sentence sounds hilarious out of context.
Yes, there's a homeless king in this.
When the homeless king, when he's like, so you're not going to kill me? And the homeless king says, no, probably not. I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
Yeah.
But so it's like he's so insignificant that they can't even decide whether or not to kill him.
Right. It's he's on the edge of like a crazy, like a sci-fi story, like a Terry Gilliam movie, or like even a superhero movie. Like, it feels like he's just a fly on the wall, basically.
He's on the edge. What it is he's on the edge of like a James Ellroy novel.
Yes,
like,
that's a good
the
one.
Sinister, dark underbelly of Hollywood.
Right.
That he actually does uncover a dark mystery about Hollywood.
Yeah.
But they talk about it a few times. It's in one of his...
He murders a man with Kurt Cobain's guitar.
He does. He bloods
the
man to death.
Guys, this movie is insane.
Kurt Cobain's guitar. It's 110% crazy.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it and you like things that are insane, we're probably going to spoil a lot of it. This movie is bonkers. And in a way that I would argue is good, but not everybody... It makes sense why this is like a 50%. Like, it's,
for the most part, there were several times... I mean, I watched this movie by myself in my house. There were several times where I said out loud, what the fuck is this movie?
Yeah. That's why I liked it so much. I mean, again, that's why it... This is a movie where I feel like he must have known, the director must have known, like, when he made it, like, people aren't gonna like this. Because it's...
Well...
It reminds me of like Adaptation, which I think Adaptation is clearly a better movie than this, and it has a more clear thesis. But
most,
it is
most
a movie
of the world
that the
agrees that Adaptation is better.
It's a movie that the first time you watch, you're like, "What the fuck did I just? What just happened?" And then you have to go back and watch it, and you're like, "Oh, okay, I see."
David Neat. Robert Mitchell has said in interviews that there's a mystery in the film that's just for the audience to unravel. And I'm like, I'm not going to fucking do that, man.
Oh, I want to do that. Because I love the mystery stuff so much.
Well, there's so much. Back to your point about how, like, we all want to, everybody wants to feel like they're important and he's on the edge of something. Like, they have that conversation a few times.
Yeah.
Where, like, he's talking with Topher Grace, and Topher Grace says, like, oh, yeah, it's the persecution complex. Like, who needs werewolves anymore? We all invent these conspiracies so that we can feel like we're important, or that we're at the center of something, or that there's some kind of control or order to everything that happens. And that's kind of the theme of the movie. There is a conspiracy, but we don't really figure all of it out.
Well, it's all kind of on the sidelines. We learn that there's a guy writing every song. Every popular song.
Yeah. For no reason. Well, like, that doesn't connect to anything.
He takes credit for like songs that are really old.
Oh, like, he takes credit for Ode to Joy.
Doesn't? Yeah, he does. Ode to Joy. Yeah. So like, he's immortal?
He's either immortal or that history is fabricated.
Yeah, or he's part of an organization that's like a new person all the time.
Although the lyrics in the song that old song wrote did lead Andrew Garfield to one of the underground tombs. Okay, so the conspiracy here is that rich Hollywood people get pharaoh tombs made for themselves that they get buried in with three wives that they choose through this escort service, and they're supposedly will ascend to another dimension after six months.
This is why I like this movie, because what the movie easily could, like... That's such a crazy fucking...
It is.
What this movie could have easily done is not answer any questions, and that would have pissed me off. But it solves the mystery, the main mystery, because the main mystery is he meets this this woman who's his neighbor, and they like hit it off, and then she disappears overnight. And so the question is, where did she go? And she sees like fireworks go off, and it disturbs her, and then she leaves. And they answer that question, and I love that the answer was crazy. Because that's my favorite type of mystery, is when it's like he got this like little peek into this thing, and then as he slowly unravels it, it just, like, you don't know what the fuck is going on for the longest time. But you could argue that stuff like the owl lady like, is you can see why she's tied into it. You know what I mean? Where it's like, we get enough of the answer that the other stuff is like...
Is she just like an assassin of the Illuminati?
Yeah, like, something not, like that. Yeah,
something like that. Okay. Yeah,
that's what I mean is that we don't have to have a specific answer, but it's like there's enough there that I can, in my head, be like, oh, yeah, she's probably like an assassin, or she might be this or that, or who, like, it all fits in the tone of what he's uncovering, which is that it's fucking crazy.
There's a couple of moments in this film that really hit it home for me where it's like, he should do more horror movies.
Oh, yeah. He has horror movie moments in this.
Yeah,
when he's
does.
In his park. Well, first he has that dream about the woman eating the guy, and the guy, the body splits apart.
Yeah, it gets and dragged, like, into two different directions.
That was really cool. And then when he's in there and there's that body coming after him, this dark figure.
Yeah, this figure chasing him, which might be the owl lady. I don't know who that was.
Yeah, it's probably the owl lady, which every time he shot the owl lady, she was creepy as hell.
Creepy as fuck, especially when he goes to the crime scene and the blood's there on the bed. And, like, we know what that means because we know the owl lady kills people in their sleep.
Right.
And then he watches the tape, and he's hearing noises in the house as he's watching the tape of the owl lady walk down the hallway. And I'm like, yeah, you're pretty good at this, man. You should do more horror.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure he'll do more horror. I think he should do both because I really enjoyed the weirdness of this.
This is so weird.
Yeah. It's not every day you get a weird movie.
It's such a dense movie.
Yeah.
And it's both in a good and a bad way, because it's dense in the sense that, and this is purposely done, that he crams a lot of information into every shot, and only about 60% of it means something. The rest of it is just total misdirect.
Again, the dog killer, I love all the dog killer stuff, because at the very end, I think the implication is when
He's the dog killer.
But I don't think he actually is. Maybe he is. I think the implication is that they're basically saying, because at one point when we're talking about the homeless king has him tied up, and he's like, are you going to kill me? What happens first is the homeless king gets really upset, and he's like, why do you have dog treats in your pocket? And he's really intense about it. And, like, the implication is like, oh, maybe he's the dog killer. But what I got more out of that is, like, these people also don't know who the dog killer is, and they're also upset about it.
Right, and the coyote leads him to the party where he meets his ex-girlfriend.
Right.
Because the homeless king tells him to follow the coyote. So their dogs are connected to them somehow,
yeah.
I guess. It's goddamn this fucking movie.
This movie's like a weird dream. Everything's...
Yeah.
It's weird that certain things that do pay off. Like, the opening is... Not the opening, but, like, the first introduction is him spying on his old topless neighbor.
The bird lady.
And he's just casually spying. He casually spies on women a lot in this. They don't present him as necessarily a great guy. They show him beating up children in this.
That I fucking love that.
That was
scene.
So good.
He comes down out to where his car is parked, and he drives like a fairly nice Mustang.
Yeah.
I think the implication is that he's a failed actor, right?
Yeah, well, people keep saying, how's work? How's your work? And yeah, everybody he's kind of around seems to
be in the industry. Yeah, and his ex-girlfriend is an actress, and she's like, yeah, well, you got to keep trying, right? That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, yeah, but he's given up. Like, he's so behind on his rent that the crooked FBI agent from Cliffhanger is about to evict him.
That is who that is.
It's 100% who that was.
Yeah.
And we see later in the movie that his very nice Mustang gets towed, and the tow truck driver's like, you got to make your payments, man. So he's, like, living beyond his means.
Right. Yeah.
He's just given up. He's not working. He's not doing anything anymore.
It's a big level of this is that, man. Yeah. There's so many meta things about this. Cause yeah, he keeps going to these crazy, like, they purposely picked, like, the craziest events and parties that exist.
Have we been to that rooftop place? It looked real familiar.
It did look familiar. I've never been to the cemetery, the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. I think that's what that was.
For the movies? Oh,
yeah,
it,
I've
for
never
sure
been
was,
to
yeah.
that. But they do this thing where it's
the last bookstore. He goes to the last bookstore.
Yeah. And that all fell on purpose because, again, it's very meta where it's like an outsider looking in. Like, it's that where this is all about these big, crazy... Hollywood people mm-hmm. who are in control, and he's like spending most of the movie just trying to get in there, but for a different reason, not for an acting, but it's still like, why can't I be in your fancy club? I'm on the outside of all these things.
It's still just as closed off to him. And for the five scenes that he's in, I fucking love Jimmy Simpson in this too.
Yes, he's great. It was so weird that he was in it.
Yeah, he's playing like Robert Downey Jr. in this movie.
Yeah, he kind of is. Not literally, but he's acting like Robert Downey.
Yeah, he's acting like a Robert Downey Jr. character. Although I will say the scene where he meets Jimmy Simpson at the bar in the mausoleum in the tomb beneath the cemetery is badly ADR'd.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll have to check that out.
They do a good enough job of like, the actors do a good job syncing their words up to their lips on screen, but it's like you can tell like it's not mixed correctly.
Right.
So it was jarring. I don't normally call stuff like that out, but it was just like it was distracting to me in that scene.
Would play into my theory of why this movie was delayed, because I think this movie was delayed because there was difficulties in production we don't know about, that the director was a perfectionist, or that there was some sort of problem. And then what compounded that was the fact that this movie is crazy. And so the production company, A24, was probably like, look, we'll get it out. But like, nobody's scrambling for this. Like, we don't even understand it. You know?
Like, yes. Like this. Yeah. The script is, man, like I can, like, I mean, obviously the reviews speak to this, but like, one out of every two or three people is going to think the script is gibberish. Like, it's like, it's so,
yes,
it's so obtuse and like so cryptic that you're,
but
like,
it's not annoying in any way. And like, for example, the dialogue is fairly normal. Like, the dialogue is kind of noir.
It's very noir. His version of a noir movie.
Yeah. And so like, that it's pleasing to watch, I found. Like, no one scene was me being like, oh, come on, like, this is so hacky or this is so irritating. Like, it's all very well directed, very well shot. It just doesn't amount to anything it amounts to something crazy.
Yeah, a lot of the party scenes, I felt like, I was like, Jesus Christ, another one, because they don't go anywhere.
Yeah,
like,
well,
it's just about him not having access.
Yeah, I wonder if this is part of David Robert. What's his fucking name?
Mitchell.
I wonder if some of this is him feeling like he's on the outside.
Maybe.
I haven't looked into his history that much, but It Follows takes place in Detroit, and I think that's just where he was from. We saw him speak. And I think he talked a little about that. Like, I don't think he was born in this area. I'm sure he's been here for a while, but this felt like the movie of someone who is like not from this area. And I'm not from this area.
I looked him up. He graduated from Florida State.
Yeah. It just feels like someone looking at Hollywood from the outside, which is it's a very silly city.
I've had experiences like
the ones in this movie.
Yeah.
Where it's like, what the fuck is this? What are we doing? You know?
Yeah, like I've been to a few parties like this, and it's just like where Andrew Garfield persists because, you know, he has to. He wants to find out what happens to this lady, and then ostensibly he has to because he's trying to advance his career. That's, I guess, like the meta version of that, but like when I'm in these situations, I just get exhausted and go home.
Right, exactly.
I'm like, fuck this.
And then there's additional messages about like, how betrayed he felt when he learns that this songwriter wrote Nirvana songs. Mm-hmm. And that idea of wanting to be on the inside and feeling like you're out of this thing, but also that this thing is controlling all the things you think are counterculture and on the outside. I don't know.
Well, I brought up his car earlier because he goes downstairs and these kids
have
carved a dick into his car, and we see the dick at least one or two times later.
Yeah,
but it doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't mean anything.
See, things are connected, but they're not.
Sometimes a dick is just a dick.
Sometimes a dick's a dick. There's just these kids, egg in cars and carving shit into them. This one kid's pissing on a car. They filled his door handle with gum. So like when he sees them, he chases them. He like ambushes one kid and just beats the fuck out of him.
Yeah,
and the
he other shoves kid an comes egg in his mouth.
Yeah, he's like choking him with an egg. The other kid comes up, he beats that kid's ass too, and he's just kicking them on the ground.
And these kids are like, what, maybe 7th grade, 6th grade?
Yeah, they're like middle school. And it's right after they reminded us he was Spider-Man. And he's out in the street beating the shit out of these kids.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
Oh my God, I loved that scene.
I love that scene too.
Doesn't have anything to do with anything.
It more just sets up the anger in him. And it's also, again, he's not a good guy in this.
No, I wanted to talk about that.
The arc, by the way, is he finally fucks his neighbor, the bird lady.
Yep, he finally fucks the bird lady. We have no idea what her parrot's saying.
Yeah, they paid that off, sort of.
Yeah, sort of. No idea what that goddamn bird is saying.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about how he's kind of scummy and just the general vibe and characters of this movie. It's very Bret Easton Ellis. And yeah. I mean that in the exact way that you're taking it.
Yeah. It's that noir tradition where women are treated terribly.
Women are just like, women are like chattel in this.
Yeah.
It's pretty, I don't know how to feel about that. I mean, he's certainly not being glorified for his role. And he's very much a scumbag. And there's a running gag of how bad he smells.
Yeah. Also, the women aren't dummies or anything.
No, that's true.
It's just, again, it's like it reminds me of kind of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is the same way.
Yeah,
where it's like that's just the only women characters we're really meeting are like women who want to be actresses in this terrible on these awful parties and stuff like that. Like, it's a stereotype, and again
it's not
nothing about this movie felt like, I didn't feel gross from it, because, and I think it's because they don't, you know, he's not a good person. At no point do you feel like the movies, there's a part where he goes off on how the homeless suck. And then,
I know.
And it was so good because it was, his perspective is wrong, obviously, but it's like a realistic, it's not like a straw man, like, oh, fuck the homeless. Like, he gives an argument for why he hates the homeless.
That's he says they're bullies.
Yeah, he says they're bullies and they're looking at us. Oh, that's because it's fucking, he says they're from the outside looking in on our lives.
He's talking about himself.
Yeah, he's talking about himself. God, yeah. That's so good. And then I love the woman's response, which is like, you could just give him a dollar, you know?
Like, yeah.
You don't have to be a dick. But that's what, yeah, man. Yeah, he's talking, because he's also soon to be homeless. And that's the skunk smell. Like, he's a smelly guy with nowhere to go,
mm-hmm.
who's just sort of a failure, who's looking for this bigger thing.
Yeah.
And he finds this, like, private little club that he doesn't get to go into. And by club, I mean tomb.
Yeah, this series of tunnels and tombs, like pharaoh tombs.
Right.
Beneath Los Angeles.
But those guys aren't good. Like, no one's that great in this.
I do love the one scene where he's over at Topher Grace's house and they're having the conversation about feeling like you're like Andrew Garfield starts it by saying, you ever feel like you're like living the wrong version of your life? Like, something went wrong and then it's like your life is not playing out in the version that it should have been. And then when Topher Grace starts talking about patterns and shit and how it's like, oh yeah, it's the persecution complex, we all want to feel important. Mm.
It's also just two guys from bad Spider-Man movies being like, you ever feel like things should have worked out differently?
Yeah. I mean, Andrew Garfield's got an Oscar nom though, so
he's fine. He's
doing okay.
They're both doing fine.
They're both still in things.
I think that's why they're able to comment on it, because it's not like, yeah, neither of their lives were ruined by Spider-Man.
No,
they were just in bad versions of Spider-Man. So it's fine talking about Spider-Man.
Spider-Man 3 is one of the biggest movies of all time.
You're right. Oh, that's true.
I don't think Topher Grace feels that bad about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point was, is as they're having this conversation that's kind of deep or at least a little introspective, while they're spying on a woman with Topher's drone.
Yes.
And she comes in and sits down like, oh, great, we've been waiting, because they've just been waiting outside her window with this drone for her to come by. And she does take off her shirt and is sitting there in her underwear, but she's like weeping.
That was great.
And it like showed, they're both like clearly not enjoying it, but neither one wants to say anything.
Right. Like, and then
like
he's just like,
I'm out about what they're doing.
Yeah. And he's just like, I'm going to go.
Because he's like, all right, I'm take off.
I love that because it, yeah, there's a lot of, again, he like peeps on women a lot in this.
And that's how we're introduced to him, just peeping on women with binoculars.
Yeah. And again, it's not seen as, they don't treat it like Porky's or anything. It's seen as like, look how shitty this guy is. And that's a great moment of just like, yeah, this is what happens when you spy on people in their personal lives.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You're going to catch them crying. Like, you're going to catch these really personal moments in their life. Oh, it's great. Yep.
When he yanks the singer off the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
Beating his ass. And we see a pattern in his shit.
Right. Oh, man. What a weird fucking movie.
Yeah, like...
The singer Jesus.
The singer Jesus. Jesus and the Brides of Dracula is a band in this film.
Yeah.
It's actually the band that's playing with her is Silver Sun Pickups.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Are they good?
They're okay. They were a band from like 10 years ago. I mean, okay. Obviously they're still making music.
When this movie was made?
Yeah. No, it was like one of those... they're legitimately an okay band, but it was definitely one of those like indie cred bands.
Right.
Yeah, I just like to see where he beats up that singer. Yeah. Because the guy's just like, he's like, come on, man, why are you hurting me?
Yeah.
And Andrew Garfield's like out of his mind, like, tell me the fucking code.
Yeah. Oh, man. This movie did a good job at like kind of making fun of like hipster art culture, but not like. It felt like someone making fun of it who was part of it, as opposed to someone who is like
making
a caricature of it that they don't understand it.
Right.
Like this feels like someone who's been to these parties and they didn't want to make it cartoonishly, because it's so easy to do like a cartoonishly silly Hollywood party.
Right. It's not. It is kind of an indictment of the culture, but not. It's not like mean, if that makes sense.
And it's not, it's not over the top. It's like showing things that's like, oh yeah, I've seen something like that done.
Yeah,
like these weird, crazy parties where they don't look necessarily, like some of them look kind of cool. You know, they don't make them all look dumb. It's just they're overwhelming.
Yeah, it's definitely sensory overload. And there's definitely, you know, there's always going to be people that are just like, there's a good moment when he's in the Hollywood Forever Cemetery at the underground tomb bar, with the balloon lady, and she's like, "People waste so much time on things that don't matter," and then she immediately blows up a balloon and like cuts to Andrew Garfield laughs in her face.
Yeah.
So I think that's the closest it gets to being like these people are schmucks.
Well, it's little silly things like that. One of the white rabbits that he's chasing is a guy dressed as a pirate.
Yes.
And they never explain why he's just like a pirate, but you don't need to, because it's like, yeah, he's some hipster. Like, he's just, that's how he dresses, probably. He's just some guy dressed like a fucking
pirate.
When he follows the
three women who turn out to be like the three brides or whatever.
Yeah.
For another
rich
guy, like on a paddle boat through the reservoir, they like pull up in a dock and the pirate comes out from behind a tree and they hand him a bag. What the fuck? That was definitely a point where I was like, what the fuck is this movie?
Oh, yeah.
But of course,
great.
We learn later that she was just like that one lady was just getting a box that Riley Keough had forgot.
Yeah. And they're bringing it to the vault.
And she brought it to the pirate who brought it to the vault.
Yeah. No, I kind of assumed that. I was just like, yeah. I just love that this guy involved in the conspiracy.
He's dressed like a pirate.
But it doesn't mean anything. There's no reason.
He's just an asshole dressed like a pirate.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the same when he yanks Jesus off the toilet and starts punching him. Like, you see this guy before, like, you haven't heard him speak yet, but you've seen him in several scenes, and he's sort of this kind of imposing figure, and he looks kind of a little menacing just because he has this like deep brow.
Right, and you think maybe he'll be involved in some way.
Right, and he's not. He's just like a little wiener.
Yeah.
He's just like a little guy who likes to write songs, and then they gave him songs to put on his album, so he did. He has no idea what the conspiracy is.
Right. Oh, man.
Just Andrew Garfield snarling into his face.
So good.
Oh, man.
This guy's just taking a shit.
Yeah, he was just pooping.
He was just pooping. He was just trying to poop.
And then the amazing Spider-Man comes in and yanks him off the toilet.
Oh, so good. Garfield was a good choice for this.
Yeah, he's almost... I was watching this movie and thinking to myself, I wonder if he's going to be like a Gyllenhaal.
He could be.
Yeah, he's a little...
He's all right. He's not amazing yet, but like this role didn't... I don't know. This role didn't, like, it wasn't a huge stretch, but, like, the part where he's talking to her on the video phone and asking her to come back, or, like, knowing that she can't come back, like, that was good. He did good there.
He's playing a little goblin for most of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, most of the movie he's just a prick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a little goblin, man.
Yeah.
I don't think the performance was necessarily a up there, but this is like a role that Gyllenhaal would have played.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more that there's not enough to see here to know if he's a great actor, you know.
It's like mostly that scene. I can totally see Jake Gyllenhaal yanking a guy off a toilet and screaming into his face about a secret code.
Oh, 100%. I could see that happening in the next Spider-Man.
Yep.
I hope it happens.
He better yank Tom Holland off the toilet.
Yeah.
Start screaming into his face about a code.
I want this director to get more Spider-Man actors together. I just want him to collect Spider-Man actors, see how many he can get in a single movie.
And not have it mean anything.
No.
Just keep winking at us. Like, he'll keep putting more Spider-Man actors in, and they'll keep buying Spider-Man comics for no reason.
Yep.
And for nothing. Nothing at all. There's nothing there.
Man. God damn this movie.
I think this movie might be brilliant.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it from beginning to end. I never stopped liking it because it kept me hooked with the mystery, and then it gave me enough answers at the end that I was like, okay, I get it. There's a lot going on here, and like I'm getting like they answer, okay, this is what happened to her. This is what happened to this one character. And that's the main mystery. And so we get that, but it just hints at so much more. God, he bashes that guy's face in with a guitar.
He does.
So weird. Yeah.
It's a full on drive head cave in.
Yeah.
he bludgeons that man to death.
It's such an absurd movie. And there's even like, we haven't talked too much about, yeah, there are scenes that are just played for comedy. When he's having sex with that lady while they're watching the news.
It's Ricky Lindholm.
Is that who that is?
Yeah. She's been showing up a lot. Like we just saw her in My Best Friend's Girl for Best Bad Movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they're just watching this family crying on TV while they're
having. Yeah, well, they start talking about Kurt Cobain, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I got it signed by his daughter," and she's like, "Oh, that's cool." Then they look over and they're watching. They're just having a conversation about things going on in the room.
They did a good job with that because they establish pretty quickly that they're not like it's a casual, superficial.
Yeah, yeah, they're not dating. They're just kind of having sex.
Yeah, and like they do that when he gets sprayed by the skunk, and later she's like, "I'll be back when you smell better." Like like, "I'm not gonna stick with you through this." Like,
yeah, I'll be back when the smell goes away.
Yeah. Oh man, what a weird movie! I'm getting sprayed by the skunk. It's like the Jack Nicholson nose in Chinatown. Like, there's.
Yeah,
you gotta, if you're doing a film noir, you gotta injure you gotta do something to your main character
that he's like permanently fucked for the rest of the movie.
That there's just something that marks him. Sprayed by a Skunk was pretty great because they just keep talking about it, like, oh yeah, there's lots of skunks around
here. He pukes a lot in this movie. The skunk scene, he gets sprayed by the skunk and throws up immediately.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
It's great. He gets a lot of abuse. A lot of abuse.
His, like, clothes get damaged and stay that way. Like, he's got, like, a torn flannel shirt for a lot of
right.
the movie.
He just keeps getting pummeled by life.
He's wearing the same jeans, so you can see that gum stain on his pants just get worse and worse as the movie goes on.
This is also, because that was one of the possibilities watching this movie, as I was like, am I just watching someone go crazy? Like, the reveal that he is the dog, like, the dog killer thing, I thought one of the reveals was going to be, like, none of this is happening, he's the dog killer. Like,
oh, I think it's still entirely possible that a lot of stuff didn't happen.
Yeah, that's true. And that he is the dog killer, because they'd leave that
he
open.
He could very possibly be the dog killer, yeah.
I think he's supposed to be, right? Because that's such a big theme. It's in the credits and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, they show people killing dogs in the credits in like a cartoon form.
They definitely do.
I think he's supposed to be the... I think part of it is that... See, it's that where it's like, are we watching how someone goes crazy and homeless? Is that what we're watching? Like, just someone who's lost their mind?
Yeah, maybe. They do tell us, like, the very first comic he reads, Under the Silver Lake, is talks about the dog killer being in this old film that they saw.
Right!
And he's a failed actor who was jealous of dogs.
Yes, yeah, so he's killing the dogs. Oh, God, it is! He's the dog killer.
And he's a failed actor, and he tells the homeless king that he's keeping dog biscuits because his ex-girlfriend, whose billboard he keeps seeing, has a dog, and he wants to be able to feed the dog a biscuit and rub its ears like it used to be. Also, they're the same biscuits in his dream.
Right. They are
the
same biscuits.
When he finds
the
dead dog, and then he finds...
Yeah, okay.
Eating the guy in half.
That makes the most sense. Because, again, what he's saying about homeless people looking in on our lives. Like, this is about someone who's a failed actor.
Oh, yeah,
actor who's locked outside the party and is going insane.
Yeah. Like, that's a big I don't know that he's necessarily the dog killer, but he certainly could be.
He certainly could be, but it all points to the same. It's all the same theme.
Mm-hmm.
Man. What a weird fucking movie.
Yeah, I don't... goddamn movie. I don't know... It ended, man. I was like, I don't know quite what to make of this. Like, I believe it ends with an R.E.M. song, and he's listening to an R.E.M. song when he's dancing with the balloon lady, and then realizes he's eaten way too much of, like, an acid cookie or something.
Wait, that's not when it ends.
No. I'm saying... In that scene, he's listening to an R.E.M. song.
Oh, yeah.
And it's What's the Frequency, Kenneth? And the end credit song, I think, is another R.E.M. song. So it's like, what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything.
I don't know.
Like,
that,
I don't know.
There was a lot of... I felt old watching this because there's a part where she goes, we're going down to this place that plays old music. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is old music.
Yeah, it's immediately brimful of Asha.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my God, is this how like I feel about music from the 70s? Mm-hmm. Oh shit. Like it definitely there's a lot of like nostalgia in this. And of course that plays into the songwriter.
Yeah.
Where it's the realization that just like everything is bullshit. Everything from your past that you love is like corporate bullshit. It's weird. Weird themes here.
Yeah.
But they all seem to connect.
They're not weird themes. It's just done in a completely insane way. It's the thing.
I'm not sure. It's weird because I feel like I should have more to say about it, but I just really enjoyed this fucking crazy ass ride through Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's not for everyone.
No, it's definitely not for everyone.
Like it is definitely too long. This film has a little bit of a self-indulgence problem.
Yeah. It's objectively too long. It shouldn't be this long.
Yeah.
Whether or not I enjoyed it. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's too long. I think I can see this rubbing people the wrong way for that reason. Cause I think it's easy to feel like it's purposefully obtuse and therefore deep. You know what I mean? Like, not everything that's confusing is deep, But no. The more we talk about this movie, the more I'm like, oh, like this all makes sense. Like we're connecting dots.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of like how It Follows has underlying messages. Like this feels like he thought about it. Like this isn't just like someone splattering paint on a canvas and then calling it art.
It's not super deep. Like It Follows. No. It's like It Follows is fairly obvious with its themes. And I think this movie is too. It's just,
yeah. Which is what a good movie should be.
The more you think about it, the more you're able to connect scenes and be like, oh, okay, so this means that all connects to this theme. So that, yeah, it's not like super deep.
Yeah, I think this is going to have cult classic status.
Probably.
I think this marks him as a continually good director that I'm curious to see what he's going to do next. Because the tone of this, I mentioned Gilliam briefly, like it feels kind of Gilliam-esque in the weirdness. But it's not shot like a Gilliam film in any way.
No, not at all.
It's just like, I don't know. It's just uniquely weird in a way that I haven't seen before.
It's like, it's dense and it's cryptic, but it's like playfully cryptic. Like it knows it's kind of frustrating you with how weird it's being.
Yeah, exactly. It's just nice to see. Like, you're right. You said it before. Like, I want to see him do more horror again.
Mm-hmm,
but
for sure.
This gave me, like, I guess the other reason it reminds me of Gilliam is because Gilliam was just unique. And this was unique.
Yeah.
And so it's not every day you see a unique director who makes movies that are so weird that the studio doesn't know what to do with it. But wants to put it out still.
This is definitely one of the most unique films I've ever seen. I've never seen anything like this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And for that, it's worth seeing. You might end up hating it.
Go ahead.
I would tell people, like, if you feel the need to shut it off, shut it off. But it does pay off enough at the end, I think.
Yeah.
Like that would have been the biggest problem I would have had with this movie is if it ended and I felt like there was no point to me watching it.
Yeah.
But I felt satisfied by the end.
Yeah, like it doesn't pay everything off, like we said. It leaves some stuff in the air, but it's like it pays off enough that even though parts of this movie were kind of a slog for me. Like particularly, like I said, all the party scenes, I was like, Jesus Christ, another one.
Right. Yeah.
Hitting the end, it was satisfying enough. It's like, okay, I'm glad I watched this.
Yeah.
Watching it, it makes me hope that this director does another horror movie. I want to see him do a straightforward mystery.
Yeah, me too. I would
like
love to see him do
a creepy, weird
more
Hollywood mystery.
Yeah, and I think that's what probably the disappointment is going to be for this, is I think people were excited for the director of It Follows to do like a noir mystery. And I think they're not exactly going to get that.
No, it's kind of that.
It's kind of that, for sure. But it's a lot of other things, too.
Yeah.
I definitely want him to keep making these types of weird, like, indie movies. I definitely want him to have a decent enough budget to do what he wants and have actors that he wants while making movies that aren't completely in the studio system. A24 movies.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, we compared him to Gilliam already, and he's sort of been able to do that, even though his movies never make money.
Yes.
There's all, you know, actors want to work with Terry Gilliam.
Yeah,
so.
But this guy isn't Terry Gilliam, in notoriety. Where
if he keeps making movies like It Follows and movies like this that are just like weird and I mean and like changing the genre and unique and you know they have decent actors in it.
He's got a hell of a mind, like that's for sure. It Follows was one where like that's a movie that's so fucking simple. But it's so effective in the way he did it. And it's also weird. Like, people forget how weird, how like, it's supposed to be timeless. So, like, she has that weird clamshell phone.
Clamshell Kindle. Yeah.
Yeah, like, little things like that where you're like, what the fuck? Like, he always has at least one moment of just like, what the fuck? He also seems to have at least one moment of a naked lady. That's part of his theme now, too, apparently.
Well, there's lots of naked ladies in this.
Yes, there are plenty. Yeah. Too many naked ladies.
I'll say too many.
Yeah.
Although I don't think the owl lady would have been as creepy if she weren't totally naked.
No. No home intruder is more creepy than when they're naked. Because it means that they've driven there naked.
Like, yeah.
Or they took off their clothes outside your place.
Or scuttled there. We don't know how the owl lady gets around. True.
I love the part where Andrew Garfield runs home naked.
Yeah. After the lady from Alien Covenant gets shot through the heart.
Yeah. To look like his porno mag.
To look like the cover of the Playboy magazine, yeah.
Yeah.
That he
has. There's like a whole theme of sex in this as well. That we haven't even really gotten into. That was one moment that I was like, huh.
That's like I said, that's a part of the movie that I had at least a small issue with. It's just you know, I don't know. It's very Bret Easton Ellis to me, like the idea of like just like this Hollywood that just passes women around. And I know that's
And it was supposed to be a villainous thing. Well, they're portrayed as like kind of lost. Like when he cocks to her and she's like, "Do you think it might have been a bad idea?" He's like, "Maybe,
maybe."
But they don't portray him as any less.
No, he's a scum.
Yeah, everybody kind of doesn't have their shit together. So like, it's not like, it's something I'll have to think about with this one. Cause it's not women are the women get a raw deal in this, like for the most part, but the men in it aren't portrayed like particularly smart or good people either. It doesn't feel cynical.
No, yeah, I guess you're right, because, like, the relationship he has with Ricky Lindholm, like, clearly she has agency there, and she's the one that's the working actress. Like, every time we see her, she's wearing some strange costume.
Right. And, like, the even the ex that he meets, like, she clearly has her
successful
life
together. Yeah.
It's more like these are all people trying to, like, that's what it is these women are also, like, trying to get in from the outside in a different way.
Yeah. They have that one line where the balloon lady is like, he's like, "Oh, you're an actress." She's like, "Yeah, I was on a soap opera between ages 5 and 6 months or something."
Right.
It's like, wow, all right, okay, you're really...
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of like, yeah, I was technically an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Man.
Yeah. Do we have any final thoughts about this goddamned movie?
Nothing. Only if you like weird movies, you'll probably like this, or it'll probably be worth your time. If you're like just looking to watch something, you know, just regular entertaining, like this isn't like I don't want this movie to come off like it's like watching Requiem for a Dream, where it's like, oh man, I need to be in a very specific mood for it. Like
it's
entertaining
like
film. It's a fun film. It's just really weird.
It's one of the strangest movies, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I recommend it for people just to experience it. But if you find yourself, I don't know, not liking it, I guess shut it off. Although, I don't know.
Yeah, like I said, there's little bits of stretches that are kind of dull for me anyway. But overall, the movie was a rewarding experience. And, yeah, it's not like you don't leave the movie feeling bad or anything. Yeah,
no. You don't feel bad by the end. You don't feel like you don't feel cheated. You don't feel like you just watched the last scene of season of Lost, where you're like, oh, okay, none of that mattered. All
right. Oh, well, fuck me,
you
right?
Too. Yeah. Exactly. It's not that. It's a rewarding and it's a fun movie. And I think if you live in LA, it's even more rewarding because you're just like, I know there.
Yeah, it's just all places that most of us have been.
And that's why, like you said, it feels a little like almost self-indulgent because it's a story of a guy in L.A. And whenever that's the start of a movie, it's just like, oh, all right.
Yep.
This better be good. Like,
yep.
And it is.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. It's pretty good. I had read, I looked something up where he said the genesis of this script came from he and his wife looking up at those, you know, like big mansions in the Hollywood Hills or whatever, and being like, wonder what goes on inside those houses.
Oh yeah.
That was kind of the genesis of this movie. And you can totally see that.
Yeah, you can. I mean,
fucking crazy idea spins out of that.
Right. I don't think it's what they imagined.
Happens
in there. Like I've been to one of those mansions. It was just a house party.
Yeah, it's, you know.
Yeah. I went to a party at one where it was rented out by, I think, like 10 people. So the mm-hmm. idea was actually, when I talked to them about it, like each one of their rent was like the same as what anybody's paying. But they were in like a big Hollywood Hills house. And like the compromise is just like, yeah, it's 10 people sharing a kitchen. And it's like, that sounds awful. But they're like, yeah, but I live in a cool, swanky 70s Hollywood house. The staircases are like spiral and rugged, and there's mirrors everywhere. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah, somebody definitely OD'd while staring into that mirror.
Oh, they better have, yeah.
Yeah, otherwise, what are you even living in this house for?
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, you gotta OD in that house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just gotta get the full Hollywood experience.
Yeah, that house is haunted by junkies.
Yep.
That house, you get waken up in the middle of the night by a specter being like, hey, you got any cash on you?
Will you read my screenplay?
Will you read my screenplay?
Yeah, that house is haunted by several of the characters in this film.
Yes. Oh, that's amazing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
The ending. Oh, blacklist. I know. Okay. The movie would end with the character who is still alive writing a screenplay based on it. Mm-hmm. And all the other ghosts being like, hey, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
That's my story, too.
Well, you can't spend any royalties, man. You're a ghost.
Yeah.
I can't give you a percentage.
Yeah.
What are you going to buy with it? Sheets?
Yeah.
You stupid ghost.
It could be called The Ghost Rider. It'd be the third movie called The Ghost Rider.
Mm.
Yeah. It'd be very confusing.
Add it to the two Friday the 13th sequels. We got it right.
It would be all right. It would be The Ghost Rider, like the Pierce Brosnan one. However, mm-hmm. we then do a sequel where the spirit comes back and takes revenge, and that's Ghost Rider: Spirit of Vengeance, would be the yes. sequel.
Yes.
Yeah. You got this.
Well, I think that's a sode, right?
Yeah, I think so too.
That can be a sode. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you want to support us, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed, where you can get some exclusive podcasts like Fox Mulder is a Maniac and Tom and Jeff Watch Batman. We also do movie nights and other things with our patrons. So if you feel like spending even more virtual time with us, go check that out.
Do it. Get all up in our shit.
Get all up in our shit.
Yeah. Do it now.
Yeah. What else? Do we have anything else we got to plug? tpublic.com/stores/gamefullyunemployed. We got some shirts. Yeah.
We should have more shirts coming.
Yeah.
I know we promise that every week. It's but like one
literally
of these weeks
episode,
it'll be true.
I think we say, yeah.
One of these weeks will be true, I swear.
It will eventually be true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we should definitely make a t-shirt of a ghost trying to hand somebody a screenplay.
Sure.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, we should do, yeah. I just want a t-shirt of Andrew Garfield punching children. I want a whole movie of that.
Just shove it a full egg into his mouth, shell yeah. and all.
I want Bully Spider-Man all day, every day.
Yeah.
Make it a TV show. I don't care.
Just running around Los Angeles in the middle of the night screaming at people.
Yeah. It's his natural habitat.
Yep. He's behaving so like a spider.
Yeah. Yeah. He's doing whatever a spider can.
That's right. Yeah. It's lurching out of the darkness and snatching children.